equipment is not high tech.
Okay.
Okay.
I can substitute.
Okay. This is National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History, 2. The date is May 2, 1996. I am Gabrielle Denman. I will be the interviewer. Selma Weiss will be the recorder. We are interviewing Professor Stephen Fenves at his home. Dr. Fenves, tell us, please, the place and date of your birth.
I was born in Subotica, Yugoslavia, then Yugoslavia,
yeah.
Now Serbia, in 1931.
Professor Fenves, tell us as much as you know about the background of your immediate family. You can start either on your father's side or your mother's side.
On my mother's side, I know more than about my father's side. My father's family migrated from Galicia to Hungary sometimes in the 1880s. My uncle was born near the Polish border. My father was born in a small village. My grandfather was a tanner. My father was raised in a shtetl, and then in his youth, they moved to a larger city, Subotica, where my grandfather had a lumber yard. On my mother's side, both sides of the family were assimilated Jews. Think they came from Moravia, but in Budapest, there were both sides of the family had architects, doctors, university professors, and so on in Budapest. My maternal grandfather was before World War I was. Circuit judge.
In Hungary. You say Moravia, that is Hungary.
That was part of Austria-Hungary.
Okay, right, okay, good.
And
how did your mother meet your father?
My uncle started a newspaper.
Where?
Around the turn of the century. He and my father changed their name from Friedman to Fenves, because you had to have a good Hungarian name to be in the arts. And my father became the manager of my uncle's newspaper. My mother studied fine arts at the University of Budapest, and then worked as a freelance graphic artist, and that's how she met my she started doing freelance work for my father's newspaper.
I see. In Budapest?
In Subotica.
Okay.
The two families were of quite different social milieu, and my maternal grandparents were opposed to the marriage and sent my mother on a grand tour, all of her...
To America?
No, to Europe.
Yeah, I'm teasing.
Austria, Germany, Italy, France, and all of the etchings that I had, she did at that time. But 2 years later, she came back to Subotica and married my father.
Is that a large town? Is it still in existence, number
it's
one?
Yes. It's 5 kilometers from the Hungarian border.
I see.
It's a town of about 100,000, where before the war there was about 6,000 Jews.
Should we talk about your mother's etchings now? Or do you want to?
As you wish.
Let me explain to the tapes that as we came into your home, immediately we were pleased to see these wonderful, wonderful etchings, and we'll have another look at them, certainly. They're very beautiful. Can you tell us about some of the subject matter?
They're mostly from her travels,
uh-huh.
Italy, France, Germany. About half of them are lithographs and half of them are etchings.
I noticed the portraits.
That is a portrait of my mother as a student at the art school in Budapest, done by one of her classmates, and the other other one is a portrait of my grandmother done by my mother.
Certainly magnificent.
She's certainly very talented. Now, was your father, did he have formal education?
My father went as far as high school. Then he went to work to support his older brother, who went on to Budapest to study law, but became involved in literature and journalism. And my father was always second fiddle to his older brother until 1935, when my uncle died, and then my father took over as manager, as editor of the newspaper.
How many newspapers were there in Suva?
Was the only Hungarian language daily. I think there was a Serbian paper, possibly a Croatian paper, but it was the only, it was the only Hungarian language daily outside of post-World War I Hungary. Neither in Czechoslovakia nor in Romania, which both had very large Hungarian minorities, mm-hmm. were there any Hungarian language newspapers.
Well, now, but your father's background was not Hungarian.
Yes.
It was Hungarian.
Yes. He certainly did all of his schooling in Hungarian. Hungarian plus Latin. He did his valedictory speech in high school in Latin.
That's how they did. Yeah. That's fascinating. Okay, so how they met, and when did they marry? Your father and mother?
They married in 1927. My sister was born in 1929, and I was born in 1931.
And tell us about your early school and your early childhood.
I had a very sheltered, affluent, highly assimilated childhood. Our household consisted of cook, maid, chauffeur, and governess, which sounds exorbitant, but in a dirt poor country like Yugoslavia was, it was a social obligation. If you could afford a car, one of maybe two dozen cars in town, and you could certainly afford to support another family by hiring a chauffeur to drive that car. I went to grade school in a public school that was actually funded by the Jewish community. Language of instruction was Serbian. At home we spoke Hungarian, which when our kids started going to school, I thought that was very strange, that they studied the same language as the one that they spoke at home, because that certainly wasn't my case. We went to, we had religious education 2 or 3 afternoons a week after school, and a student service on Saturday afternoons, because regular school went 5.5 days. So that was, my Jewish education was pretty minimal.
Did you say that it was a public school, but it was...
Yugoslavia, you have to understand how poor Yugoslavia was. There was mandatory education requirement, but the state could not fund the schools. So any religious or any other community that put up the funds for the building and for 3 teachers, the state supplied the 4th teacher, and then it was an official state school.
So did your family sort of have to support the school?
Yes, the Jewish community supported the school.
And you mentioned how large the Jewish community was?
About 6,000 out of a population of 100,000.
Was the home observant? Did you observe the holidays now?
Minimally.
I
remember Seder, not with all the blessings. I remember dinners before the high holidays and the festivals, family getting together to break the fast at Yom Kippur. My paternal grandmother bringing a pot of sholent for Saturday meal, but that's about it.
How about the cultural life?
My parents were very much involved in the cultural life of the city. My mother exhibited art reviews. My father, particularly once he became the editor of a major newspaper, participated in all of the cultural activities, theater, etc.
So you were practicing Jews, changed your name.
Yes.
Because you know a question I'm getting to. Did you as a child feel any anti-Semitism? Did your family?
Not till the war broke out in 1941, and then suddenly things became quite different.
Born in 1931. Okay, did you have friends?
No. We were already in the resettlement area just before the deportation. I never had friends.
Did you have friends at school? What kind of friends? Were they mixed? It was a Jewish school. Were all the children Jewish?
No.
That was my question.
No. I imagine about 80% of their kids were Jewish. Most of my friends were Jewish. At that time, yeah. That.
How about your parents?
Probably half and half. Oh, yes.
They were in the elitist family.
Yeah.
Do you have any wonderful memories about your early education, early childhood, trips, visits?
Oh, lots of them. Trips to Budapest to visit my mother's family. I mean, both families have members in Budapest, but I particularly remember my mother's family, a couple of very prominent architects. Trips to the Alps in what is now Slovenia. Wonderful summers. We had a beach house at a lake about 10 miles, 15 miles from the city, and spent a good part of the summer there. My aunt had a large farm, and I spent a good part of my summer there. Really living in nature.
Yeah.
No electricity, no anything, just out in the country.
Yeah. And what year did misery start?
May 1941. Germany attacked Yugoslavia, and Hungary, as a ally of Germany, reoccupied the provinces that were taken from Hungary in 1919. My father was forced out at gunpoint from his office.
In 1940?
Second day of the occupation.
Mm-hmm.
So that by the first week when the order came that Jews could not employ Gentiles as servants, that didn't matter because my father couldn't have supported them anyhow. The numerous clauses, the restriction entry to academic schools was immediately imposed, and I was supposed to enter fifth grade, which is first year of the academic high school, and only 10 ruling was passed that only 10 students would be admitted, and so all summer long my father had nothing else to do, so he groomed me for this exam, and I passed it, and I was one of 10 students admitted to first year of the academic.
So you were 10 years old?
I was 10 years
old,
yes. so things for 3 years, things were getting worse and worse. Half of our apartment we had to give up to officers who billeted in half of the apartment. We lived off selling what family possessions we had. My mother did some hard work. And every month, new rules. This was forbidden, that was forbidden, this was to be turned in, that was to be turned in. As a child, I remember the prohibition to go to the movies and to the beach. That hurt more than the requirement to wear the yellow star. And that didn't bother me.
I have a question. A lot of people saw this coming and left the country. Did that occur to you, or did you realize what? I don't know anybody could realize what was coming. You know,
I mean, a lot of I don't understand my parents' generation. A lot of the handwriting was on the wall. My mother's older brother came to the States in the 20s. She had tickets for the maiden voyage of the Normandy to come to the States to visit her brother and go to the 39 World Fair. She decided not to go because the war may break out and she may not be able to get back.
That's hindsight.
I mean, do you want another anecdote? By the summer of 1943, an area south of the Danube, which was 50 miles south of us, was already under partisan control. Tito and the partisans controlled it. My two cousins were on a leave from labor battalions, which is where military age Jewish men were put in terrible conditions. My two cousins went to their mother saying that the situation is getting untenable, they're not going to go back. They're going to swim at night across the Danube and join the partisans. And my aunt put her fist down and said, no well-brought-up Jewish boy is going to go swim at night across the river and join those people in the hills. And that was that. My parents' generation considered themselves the elite, the spokespeople for German culture in the hinterlands of Central Europe. And they couldn't believe that this was happening because they so identified with German culture.
They speak German?
Yes, I had from age two. I had a governess, so that I would learn absolutely proper high German. Otherwise, I would be speaking the low class Swabian that was spoken on the streets.
You spoke a lot of languages too.
The town was absolutely trilingual. Yeah. Serbo-Croatian, Hungarian, and German. That was minimum.
But that's not a town. Even now.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned the star. Didn't you have to start to wear the star immediately?
No. It came very shortly before the German takeover in 44, but I don't exactly remember when.
Okay. And you said you went to this academic school for 3 years.
Yes.
So by this time
sitting in the back row, raising your hand and matter because the teachers weren't going to call on you anyhow. Totally isolated. May of 1944, Germany occupied Hungary. Hungary lost more troops at Stalingrad than Germany did. Good. Stupid allies of Germans, and then they pulled out, and Germany occupied Hungary. Eichmann came in, and the arrangements for deportation started. Hungary was a very willing ally in everything but the Germans, but the ruling group would not give up their Jews. So that the deportations didn't start until 1944. My father was taken away the very first week. And about a week later, we were ordered to move into a resettlement area with what we could carry.
And where was that?
That was around the rail, around the freight yard. There was this
in nearby.
In the same city, was this image that the Americans were not going to bomb the Jews, and if the Jews are located near the railroad yards, they would forget the
rail. Very smart.
So we left with what we could carry. One of the worst memories I have is the townspeople, our neighbors, standing several deep, waiting to ransack the apartment and yelling, cursing, spitting on us as we left.
And these had been your friends.
You wonder why how I have any of my mother's art at all. Mm-hmm. Our former cook, whom we had to let go 3 years earlier, lined up with the others and went in the apartment and collected one family album, my mother's recipe book, and one folder of my mother's art. That's the only thing we have left.
Well, but you said the
cook.
Cook went in
with the others.
And took the art?
Yes.
Well, how did you get the...
After the war, she gave it back.
You'll have to tell us about that. But should we go... Well, tell us that now.
Well, when we got back after the war, she told us that she had saved this. And so my sister has the recipe book, and we sort of shared the pictures in the album, and we sort of shared the artwork. That's all we have been able to recover. So a week after that, we were ordered out again, lined up at the railroad station, back 80 people in a railroad car, and we wound up in Auschwitz.
Now you say your father was deported.
My father was deported first.
Was he also at Auschwitz?
He was at Auschwitz. He survived the war. He was in Auschwitz. He was in a camp in a coal mine in Silesia. He came back in late 1945 on a Russian hospital train. With him for a few months. He was totally broken, physically, emotionally. And he died February 1946. Just not interested. Just was not interested.
What about your mother?
My mother, my sister, and I were together on the train, deciding in Auschwitz-Birkenau. We were separated. We went to one side, men to the other side. My mother and sister went one way, I went the other way. German officer waving people right and left, which I didn't know what it meant at that time. I was found out soon. So I guess at age 13, I was strapping enough and healthy enough that I wasn't gassed. And they had their eyeball. Auschwitz-Birkenau was number one, an extermination camp. Second, it was a warehouse for slave labor. German foremen, officers would come in, select people to work in war industries. And the people who weren't gassed right away were kept in these compounds to be selected to go out to work, except that they never selected kids my age. I was in a compound with about maybe 1,000 kids my age, and no German foreman stopped by to pick poor kids from there. The one and only thing that saved me was my mean governess, and I spoke very good German, and the trustees, who were all German criminals, needed interpreters, and I became an interpreter. Late in the fall, when the German the trustees were the German criminals were replaced by Polish political prisoners. They needed interpreters who spoke Polish, Hungarian, and German, since most of the inmates were Hungarian. Serbian was close enough to Polish, and I volunteered. And I continued to be an interpreter and became part of the resistance organization in Auschwitz.
There was? Tell us about that.
Well, resistance in any form, smuggling lists, occasionally smuggling people out beyond the compounds, black marketeering was a big form of resistance. I was on a roof repair detail that went from compound to compound, presumably repairing roofs, but really to exchange information and barter. So I got to see most of the compounds, Auschwitz, hospital compound, Canada, where the warehouses where all of the goods were sorted out. In one of the women compounds, I met my sister. By that time, our mother had been carted away with the dead, whether she was dead or living at the time she was put in the gas chamber, in the crematorium, I don't know. So I traded all of the black market goods I had so I could get my sister a sweater and a scarf and some warm underwear before she was transported out. About October, November, I'm not sure of exact dates, the camp was being emptied out. These Polish politicals had promised that they would take care of me until liberation. They decided to smuggle me out.
Now, this was 44?
That was fall
still
of
44. Still 44, okay.
They decided to smuggle me out of Auschwitz. It wasn't safe. I mean, it's not very pleasant during selections to hide in the latrine with excrement up to your mouth to bypass the inspection and selection committee. So they found an outgoing transport and they shoved me into it. I got my tattoo.
The Poles did?
Yes.
Now, why would they do
that? Because I was part of this.
Oh, you were part?
I was part of the resistance.
Okay.
These Poles were as anti-Semitic as anybody.
Oh.
But at least for the duration of the hostilities, that was suspended. Anybody who was useful to any of the resistance was useful to them. So I wound up in a small town in central Germany, a very small labor camp, satellite of Buchenwald, attached to a Messerschmitt airplane factory. And we got off the train and lined up, and the foreman comes up to me and says, well, how come you're here? I didn't select you in Auschwitz. I was his interpreter while he was selecting workmen. He knew me. So the Poles had coached me on many things that might happen. Well, for example, if you ask me very fast what my birth date is, I still get my sister's birthday.
Because you want to.
Uh-huh. This was one thing I wasn't prepared, coached for, so I quickly...
Well, it's, keep going, it's okay.
I quickly, I thought very fast, and I said, well, with this many new prisoners, the officers in Auschwitz thought that you would need another interpreter. And so he believed it, and the SS believed it, and so I became a... which meant that as soon as we were let in, and for the first time allowed to sit down and have born food in 5 days. All of the camp trustees surrounded me. I looked obviously more different from everybody else. I had better clothes on. I was much younger. And I knew which format. And so they were terribly suspicious of me and grilled me hour after hour until they accepted me and then I became part of the resistance organization at the camp. So, that's... Do you want to stop here?
No, I want to see the tape. Keep going.
So, we worked in a Messerschmitt airplane factory 6.5 days a week, 10 hours a day. Food minimally better than Auschwitz. But resistance was everything.
That's